that I had a feeling had been underserved and underreported for many years. This was from my background as a teacher and working at Stanford Center for Research in Disease Prevention. I created a curriculum that was designed to raise awareness about eating disorders in young girls, and then went out into the school district to teach it, and found that there were a number of children having a hard time paying attention in school. Now we have a better understanding of why children can sometimes get misdiagnosed with ADD or ADHD. Sometimes the reason why they're having a hard time paying attention in school is because their brain works differently, but sometimes it's because they're thinking of horrible things that have been happening at home. They're afraid to talk about it. Teachers can be afraid to ask about it. And so children go on suffering in silence, and they can end up becoming that next generation of victims or abusers. And as a teacher, I wanted to do something to interrupt that cycle. I became a domestic violence advocate. I created a program based on what I had learned and when I worked at Stanford. So I created a program that was designed to fill a gap in services in the part of the county, northern Santa Clara County, where I was, and also a gap in services for women in middle to upper income areas dealing with more subtle forms of abuse. They, I felt, tend to get marginalized, ignored, and there's not a lot of sympathy. It's almost like people are saying, why should I care about some rich lady's problems? But there's that lack of awareness. As I began to talk more and more about this project, I met more and more women suffering from this issue, and they were so glad to have someone to talk to about it. It's beyond physical and intimate violence. There are other more subtle forms of abuse that women are suffering in silence from every day. Emotional abuse, kind of gaslighting, where a partner gets inside her head, especially if he's a therapist and well-trained, to convince her that there's something wrong with her memory. There's something wrong with the way she remembers or perceives things. And over time, there's something wrong with her mind so that she can start to doubt her own sanity. Financial abuse, especially if her husband is a financial analyst. He may end up doing the tax returns and she's doing the cooking, which sounds fine, a division of labor in a relationship where both parties are treating each other equally. But over time, she can come to realize that he's taken total control of the financial resources and she has no idea what he's making. And he refuses to share the income tax returns with her, and she knows better than to ask. She just looks at that look in his eye and knows that it's safer not to. Technological abuse. We live in Silicon Valley, and while most entrepreneurs and engineers and CEOs are wonderful people and great family men, there's that small subset who abuse their power, privilege, their education, their technological know-how, and use it. Hidden cameras in the light fixtures, in the smoke detectors, inside their cars, hacking into their computers, their electronics, so that her every move is, in fact, being watched. She may come across looking rather paranoid, but the truth is, he knows what she's doing every moment of the day. So I wanted to create a program that would address these more subtle forms of abuse that don't always rise to the level of police intervention, but do rise to the level of damaging a family and making a child look like they've got ADD, ADHD, and having them resort to self-medicating behaviors like drugs and alcohol at an early age without intervention.
If you're just joining us, I'm Kendra Ponzio, and our guest today is Ruth Darlene, founder and executive director of Women SV, and we're talking about domestic violence. Ruth, we've talked about the real subtle ones. Let's talk about the more obvious forms of abuse that we see every day.
The more obvious forms of abuse, like physical violence, we have this idea that there should be obvious evidence that you've had that kind of trauma inflicted on your body, but there isn't always. Over 54% of victims show no external signs of injury, and yet they are suffering from life-threatening internal wounds. So it's really important to spread awareness that there's also intimate partner violence where women are forced to be intimate with their partner, and there's various ways to force someone to be intimate. I have ladies who've had more children than they felt capable of handling, but they were not allowed to be on birth control. I've had ladies who were forced to have abortions when they did not want to and have been dealing with that grief ever since. It's turning a woman's body into a weapon that's used against her. those are the most more obvious forms of violence.
What kind of stats can you share with us?
The World Health Organization did a study worldwide that showed that 1 in 3 women on the planet will experience extreme intimate partner violence during her lifetime. Locally, nationally, we say 1 in 3 or 1 in 4 women, 1 in 4 to 1 in 7 men will experience it at the hands of their own intimate partner. We know that over 50% of women who end up homeless are homeless as a result of domestic violence. Children that grow up in homes where there's domestic violence are at higher risk of becoming victims or perpetrators themselves. There is that third road that with early intervention they can choose, where they learn from the pain and suffering they've experienced not to inflict it on anybody else, especially those they profess to love, but also to be more discerning about early warning signs so they can get out of a potentially abusive relationship before experiencing so many harmful side effects of it.
What are some of those predictors?
That's a wonderful question and such an important question. Early on in the relationship, we talk about the cycle of abuse, where there's a honeymoon period, hearts and flowers, where he's on his best behavior. And I say he because, going back to statistics for a moment, between 85 to 95% of domestic violence victims are female. The remaining percent are also, they're often victims of male perpetrators. So the overwhelming majority of domestic violence victims are female, but I do want to acknowledge that men can be victims and women can be perpetrators. So it's crucial to recognize early warning signs when it's so much easier to escape, because you do not leave an abuser, you escape. In the beginning, when you meet someone like this, they are typically on their best behavior. They have the mask of Dr. Jekyll, and it's not till much later that they reveal that other side, the dark side, Mr. Hyde. So in that honeymoon period, where it's hearts and flowers, sometimes you'll see love bombing, where he's almost everywhere at once, very concerned about her, wanting to check in with her, giving her gifts. I had a lady whose husband filled her apartment with flowers. At least once a week, he would clean out all the florist shops in the area to impress her. There's that sense that he would do anything for her, this sort of extreme form of what we call love bombing. She gets swept off her feet. And there's, I suppose, a little girl inside all of us that wants to meet a Prince Charming and feel that we'll be swept off and married and, you know, the fairy tale that ends with, and they lived happily ever after. Well, that's really just the beginning of so many stories, not the end. So in the beginning, when he is checking up on her, checking in with her, worried about her, or just wanting to say hi, it looks like love a lot in the beginning, but over time, those multiple texts wanting her to FaceTime him before, during, after work can start to look a little bit like stalking. When they're going out to restaurants, is he starting to recommend what she order in the restaurant, which is fine, but over time kind of make her think that there are some choices are better than others, that maybe she could do without dessert tonight? Is she thinking about that job promotion, and is he starting to question whether or not she's really ready for it? As the relationship progresses, is she spending a little bit too much time talking to that stranger at the party, the strange fellow? Is she smiling just a little bit too much at strangers? Is she wearing just a little bit too much makeup? I have one lady whose husband says she's got to wear brown mascara, not black, because black makes her look like a floozy. He regulates how long her skirts are. He regulates how far the bedspread is off the floor. This is called coercive control, and it's a very incremental process. It can creep up on a lady before she knows it. As little girls, we're not taught to recognize these early warning signs. We know for sure if you're out on a date, on your first date, and he hits you or slaps you, there's not going to be a second date. But if he's checking up on you, popping up or calling you multiple times a day, or showing concern about, are you really ready for that promotion, or do you really think blue is your color, or showing control in other areas, at first it can look like love, concern, intimacy. Over time, it looks more and more like control. This type of personality is very good at wooing and winning at salesmanship. They are consummate salesmen, and I can give you a list of characteristics of powerful, sophisticated abusers. But then once they close the deal, it's like game over and they move on to their next conquest, or it's like the hunt is better than the catch. and she becomes more and more a commodity, a resource that he will use and use up and often dispose of when she outlives her usefulness.
If you're just joining us, I'm Kendra Ponzio, and our guest today is Ruth Darlene, the founder and executive director of Women SV. We're talking about domestic violence. What is a common misconception about domestic violence? I mean, things like, I deserved it. You know, what's a misconception?
Absolutely. So, well, first of all, that it doesn't happen in nicer neighborhoods, or if it does, then a woman should have the resources to look after it herself. Fact is, domestic violence is an equal opportunity offender. It happens in every neighborhood, in all genders, all across the world, in every religion, every culture. It wears different disguises, but that evil that lurks inside is universal. A common tactic used by abusers is something called gaslighting, where he gets inside her head and starts to make her doubt over time her own reality. She can start to end up blaming herself for provoking the violence. She thinks it's her fault. She thinks, oh, if I just did fill in the blanks, got the kids to bed earlier, if I can help them get a tutor so they can do better at school because grades are so important to her partner, or if I lose weight, if I gain weight, if I wear my hair a different way, if I get that job, if I give up that job, if I move across the country to support his career, she thinks that she's got it within her power to encourage him to go back to being the man she was first attracted to. It's a very humbling moment when she realizes she is powerless over her partner's decision to behave in an abusive, controlling way. Particularly if she is a smart, successful, educated woman with lots of empathy. I'll tell you that anything in the hands of an abuser can become a weapon. Even her own ability to forgive, to try again, to turn the other cheek, to consider the traumatic background and childhood that he has emerged from. Many of us have experienced childhood trauma, but not all of us grow up to become perpetrators. There is a decision that's made down that road to go one way or the other. He made that decision. So while we can feel sorry for any abandonment issues or trauma that he may have experienced as a child, we must hold him accountable for his behavior as an adult. So that humbling moment comes when she realizes she has that epiphany that she is powerless over his decision to behave in an abusive way. And now, where does the power lie? Within herself.
What are some of the most obvious signs to look for?
Well, here's a typical profile of a powerful, sophisticated abuser. They have an excellent public image. They tend to be very successful, educated, knowledgeable. They often are very charming. They are consummate salesmen. They're very persuasive. They can convince you it's midnight and snowing and you will believe them. They have a dark side that they typically don't reveal to the outside world. Every now and again, the mask may slip, but most often they save that other side of their personality to reveal to their partners and children. This is someone who also lies easily, lies often, even when they don't need to. It's like they want to just keep in practice. They tend to lack empathy. They tend to lack remorse. They tend to lack self-reflection. They tend to lack any sense of moral compass. Truth bends according to their needs, their whim. Here is the most diabolical part. They tend to seem to derive some kind of satisfaction or even pleasure from causing pain to the very people they should be protecting the most, but not just pain, but suffering and fear, that sadistic component. They're very good at playing the victim, and they never take responsibility, almost never, for anything they've done wrong. They always have to find someone to blame. Usually it's their partner or their children.
What about spiritual abuse? That's something I think that we don't talk about very much.
I think I said earlier that anything in the hands of an abuser can become a weapon, even religion. There are couples where the abusive partner will put tremendous pressure on his partner to behave, to perform in a certain way because it's biblically correct. He will pressure her to submit to the worst forms of humiliation and abuse, saying that as a wife, she must submit. there's a sense that the Bible becomes this controlling force in her life, and Jesus gets utterly forgotten. Jesus was all about love. There's a passage in Corinthians that's read at many weddings. I think you know the one I'm going to talk about. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It is not rude. It is not self-seeking. If you flip that on its head, the opposite, that's what abuse is.
Ruth, why do they stay? Why do women stay in abusive relationships?
Such an important question. On the surface, if you haven't experienced a relationship like this, an average innocent outsider will just scratch their head and say, well, if anybody treated me like that, I'd be gone. The problem is, it's a very incremental process. Remember how I talked about in the beginning that they're in the honeymoon stage where everything is all hearts and flowers and he's on his best behavior. That's when the heart opens, she falls in love and creates this connection. And over time, they have children together. She may give up her career to raise the children. And little by little, her power is taken away from her. And especially if he's very successful in the outside world, he may be successful in convincing her that she's the reason why she's experiencing some of these behaviors from him. She's provoking him. It's her fault. Everybody else thinks he's wonderful. There must be something wrong with her. So she becomes, over time, I look at it kind of like a prisoner of war and getting sucked into a cult. We have this charismatic leader who's very convincing and has this version of reality. He isolates her from outside sources of support, so she has no one to compare her experience with. And she starts to think that his word is authority. I have ladies whose partners are very powerful in the faith community, and the ladies think he must be right. He's so well regarded by everybody else. He says it's my fault. Everybody else admires him. It must be my fault. They blame themselves. But what if over time they get educated and they start to understand, they start to develop some language around the tactics that he's using on them? Oh, that's gaslighting. That's financial abuse. Oh, he's stalking me. That's technological abuse. He's hacked into my emails. Now I have no access to the joint account, and he's counting every penny that I spend. I have to, if I forget a receipt at a restaurant, I have to go back and get that receipt and show it to him. He's waking me up in the middle of the night. He's destroying my property. He keeps me from leaving a room when I want to leave, and he's scaring me. He won't let me call even 911 when I'm afraid. I look at his eyes and I see not the man I fell in love with, but something else, something dark and dangerous. So she starts to walk on eggshells, to live in terror. She's blaming herself. She's isolated. She has no outside sources of support. Meanwhile, he often has lots of influence in the outside community. He's got friends. He's got peers. He's a man of influence. A pillar of the community often. What's going to happen if she does leave? Here's another statistic. Over 70% of domestic violence incidents happen after a woman leaves an abusive relationship. After. And then we go back to your earlier question about misconceptions. Many women think, well, I'm out of the relationship now. He'll forget it. He'll move on. He's got a girlfriend. He'll be distracted or forget about me. Not so. Many times they are fixated on getting revenge. And that's when the true danger starts, after she leaves, because she is signaling to him, you're losing control of me. The fundamental dynamics behind intimate partner violence are power and control. The abuse of power in order to control an intimate partner.
We've talked a lot about the problem and the signs, the warning signs. Tell us what Women SV does to help these women. Tell us about the services that you provide.
We run a helpline. We run two weekly support groups, one for people who are still in their relationship, the graduate group for those who are out and getting on with their lives but still experiencing some other issues like child issues and career and relationship issues. We work one-on-one, customizing individualized safety planning around all the ways they've been attacked financially, technologically, legally, emotionally, physically. We go to court with them. We go to the police station with them, attorney appointments. We keep working with them for as long as they want, and we refer them to resources.
And tell us how you're funded.
We start with the fundamental premise that it's every woman and child's right to be free and safe in their own home, and they shouldn't have to pay to exercise that right.
And also because of the rampant financial abuse in this demographic, we don't charge for our services, so we have to find other ways to raise funds. We have an annual fundraiser. We have individual donors. Our local city council donates to our program, and it's overseen by our police department. They're very supportive. We love our local police. And we also get funding from our local newspaper. Ruth, what can we do as a community to help? How can we help?
Please start a conversation with anybody you're concerned about. And you can start it by saying, I am concerned about you. I'm concerned about your children. Are you feeling safe at home, emotionally or physically? Is there anything you want to talk about? I know someone I could connect you with. They could feel free to call Women SV or visit our website. Our phone number is 833-WOMEN-SV or 833-966-3678, or they could visit our website, womensv.org. Gathering together as a community, talking about this issue at home, all the things we've discussed today, if you can open a conversation with your loved ones, educate our children to recognize early warning signs, then we can make the world a better place, safer place for everybody.
Thanks to our guest, Ruth Darling. For more information on Women SV, email us at closerlook@klove.com. That's closerlook@klove.com. For Closer Look, I'm Kendra Ponzio.
This has been KLove Closer Look. Find us online at klove.com.